KXEN, 1010 AM and 104.5 FM, Faith Talk for St. Louis. Good morning. Fred Hammond, all up in here. What's your day like so far? Good day. Mine, too, is rapidly getting better. This is the 300th day of 2018, and there are 65 days left in this year. So what you going to do? Take a beating like me? Good. Life does not let anybody get by. So prepare yourself. Go ahead, do your push-ups, run in place, drink your coffee. Do your deep-fried chocolate-covered hog inner tubes, you know. Send your blood pressure through the ceiling. All of that good stuff. But you're going to have to do this, whether you like it or not, because you ain't got no help, because you've been asking life a whole bunch of stuff. And life says, okay, handle this mess first. And you say, do I have to? And life says, yeah. All that crying and carrying on ain't going to work. Is it? All right. May I have your attention, please? The G3 Summit, STL, Missouri. He speaks, we listen. And with six powerful and anointed speakers, they are Pastor Casey Starlong, Evangelist Paula P.A. Moeller, Dr. Elaine Woodson, Dr. Claire Howard, Pastor Evangelist Rosemary Jackson Moore, and Apostle Tanya Stewart. The Mountaintop Experience with the great physician, visionary, host, Sister Reverend Denita Robinson, comedian Vicky Calmes, with special guest, anointed workshop, worship leaders, rather, Nikisha White, and First Lady of Washington Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church, Joel McLish. Try that again. Leah Joel McLish. Now, this event is on Friday, November 30th, and Saturday, December 1st. And it's going to be from 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the historic Washington Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church, and they are located at 3200 Washington Boulevard. Information, email the conference host at g3summitstlmo@gmail.com. That's g3summitstlmo@gmail.com. Dr. Robert McLish, the third pastor, and Sister Leah Joel McLish is the first lady. So try to go on by, show your love, show your support, and get into it and get involved. All right. Guest this morning, she's back again for a return engagement. Dr. Amy Narishkin. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
She just got back from a whirlwind tour from being up in Wisconsin, the cheese state. Is that the cheese state?
It's the cheese state. They sell cheese in the airport.
They do?
Yeah.
Did they have cheese where you were?
No, actually. It wasn't offered.
Okay. Now, refresh our memory again as to what you do and what your background is right quick. Not right quick, but, you know, take your time. Lay it out for us.
I am a career-long educator, and since 2014, I've been in this work developing cultural intelligence in organizations, whether it's churches, nonprofits, for-profits, schools, and particularly corporations.
How long have you been doing this now?
Since 2014.
Okay, according to this bio I have of you, empowering partners, cultural intelligence makes diverse companies profitable.
Yeah.
How profitable does it make them?
Whew, it's been shown with diversity done right, and by that I mean folks, organizations that have diversified and developed cultural intelligence, there can be a 43% return on investment.
Okay. Define cultural intelligence. How do you define that?
It's the ability to not just accept differences, but also adapt to them.
Okay. We were talking about
to be able to work with people across culture.
Yeah.
Across whatever cultural differences that are perceived, whether it's race, nationality, gender, diversity. Gender, socioeconomic class, religion, however somebody identifies difference.
Okay. Here's something from your bio that you mentioned. When someone doesn't agree with us, we feel attacked. We can become combative and close-minded. We find flaws in the other points of view. It's about winning, and it's short-sighted. Most of the time, though, we avoid conflict. We're trying to get along with people. Human nature makes us want to feel accepted, liked, and part of a group. As a result, we suppress our ideas and minimize our feelings, especially at work. No one wants to work with a person all day with whom they have a dispute. True or false?
I would say that's true for most of us. We want to work with people we like to be with, right?
Yeah.
The problem is if we are working in a place where everybody's minimizing who they are and their gifts, that it just makes it for kind of awkward, and people feel like they're stuffed down and they can't bring their whole selves to work.
But you know what? One of the things I learned that caught me by surprise, when Reagan was in office, and he made a comment one day in office. He said, "There's no racism in America." Mm. And after he made that comment, right away there was an upsurge in attacks on blacks and other minorities across the country.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah,
and I began to understand then that many times the behavior of a company or an organization is indicative of the leadership. So whatever is happening with the leadership or what's happening at top, it trickles down to those that are on the ground, that are in the trenches and that type of thing. I'm going, man, that is bizarre.
Yeah.
And I also understand that how, to some degree, it's being revealed to me with each passing day, that we all are connected, whether we like it or not.
Hmm.
Yeah, we all connected spiritually, boy, you know, because we are those beings, be it that we don't like each other or whatever the case is, we still connected.
Right.
May
I quote scripture?
Sure.
This is actually the foundation for my work. And so when I'm in secular organizations, I don't really speak to what's underlying my work. But this is 1 Corinthians 12. The eye cannot say to the hand, "I don't need you." Or again, the head can't say to the feet, "I don't need you." So there would be no division in the body, but that the members would have the same concern for each other. So if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now you are the body of Christ and the individual members of it.
Man.
We're in this together.
Whether we like it or not.
Whether we like it or not.
And many of us would much rather not believe that. Well, I can't stand you. I don't even like you. I don't like the way you look. I don't like the way you walk and talk. You think you're so much. You think you're so tough. Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know what? The brain kind of walks around going, friend or foe, friend or foe, friend or foe, deciding whether somebody is safe and whether they like somebody. And the basis on which we make those decisions are how we've been enculturated. So you've been enculturated. What is normal for you is going to be very different from what's normal to me. So what you think is suspect is not going to be what I think is suspect, because the brain really likes what's familiar and what's normal. And so I can't really blame a person if they think somebody is not right or good. That would be kind of their first reaction. So when I'm doing a workshop on unconscious bias, we talk about the fact that the very first thing that you feel or about a person that you're with, it's going to be based on kind of a reaction. And we all have that automatic way of thinking and deciding if somebody is good or bad, right or wrong, safe or unsafe. And there's nothing we can do about that first reaction. It's in the second place that we have our power. It's then we can kind of slow down, take a look around. Am I psychologically safe? Am I physically safe? Well, yeah. Well, then perhaps I can engage with that person, even though they feel weird to me, even though they feel different. Maybe I can. Maybe I can have a conversation with that and learn a little bit more. It's really interesting. When I did an unconscious bias training at my church, right? And I attend a predominantly African-American church called Word of Life Christian Church. It's in North City, St. Louis.
Okay.
And I say it's predominantly African-American because we're there. I think, the second white family. Otherwise, everyone else is black.
Okay.
And so the crowd that I was doing this unconscious bias training was a mixed race group, predominantly African American, and there were some teens there too from I think from Sumner High School, and we had just talked about the System 1 and System 2 thinking. So a researcher, Daniel Kahneman out of Stanford, wrote a book, Thinking Fast and Slow. And he talks about how System 1 thinking, we're all walking around just kind of in System 1 thinking. It's the place where we are thinking just automatically, as opposed to System 2 thinking, where you slow down and you've got some reflective thinking going on. So an example of System 1 thinking is, I got to go to the grocery store. System 2 thinking is, I should make a list. So when we're in System 1 thinking, we're not necessarily being reflective and analytical and evaluative. We're just kind of reacting. And when you slow down and you shift, that's when you have your power. So I had explained this to this group, and this was a 45-minute exercise. I'm giving you kind of the truncated version.
Sure.
But a couple weeks later, this kid comes running up to me, and he goes, Miss Amy, it worked. And this is an African-American kid. And I said, what worked? Because I didn't know what he was talking about. He goes, you know that unconscious bias thing you taught me about? And I said, yeah. And he goes, it totally worked. And I said, how did it work? And he goes, well, so I was like downtown and I was on this street corner. And this white lady across the street, we were both waiting for the light. And I could see that she was uncomfortable. And I said, how so? He said, because when she saw me, she pulled her purse closer. And I said, so? And he goes, well, I saw that that was her unconscious bias coming into play, right?
Oh.
And oh. I said, what'd you do? And he goes, I put down my hood, and I said, hello, ma'am. And we talked until the light changed. And she totally loosened up on her purse. And so I just wanted you to know, this whole unconscious bias thing, just knowing about it, is really cool.
You know, I can see that working, but you know, I'm having flashbacks now of the many times I've gotten on the elevator and I'm the only fly in the buttermilk.
The blueberry in the milk.
Yeah. The blueberry, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm standing there. Sometimes, you know, many times I try to be kind of communicative, you know.
Yeah.
I'll get on the elevator and say, hey, you know, hello everybody, let's go to the 55th floor or something like that, you know.
Right.
And many times nobody cracked a smile.
Ooh.
And I said, okay.
They don't know you.
And then there were times that, well, you know, I can relate to what the kid said about the purses, you know, being drawn closer, because I've seen that many times as well, you know. Then there were times I've got on the elevator with some white females and I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And it was quiet the whole ride. Boy, I'm going, oh, Lord, you know.
Yeah. Awkward.
And it's awkward. But for me, being the kind of person that I am, coming from where I came from, it's not awkward, but it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know
they can. It's beyond awkward then for you.
Yeah, you know, because I know they can go, you know, if they didn't like the way I looked or the way I was standing or something like that, they can go and tell the security guard, you know, talking and crying at the same time. You know, he really frightened me. He's a big black guy and that type of thing, you know. And I don't want to deal with that. I don't, man.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
How do you, with that being said, do you give workshops on how to deal with that? Is that what you just talked about? Was that an example of it?
That's an example of racism at work. Somebody living in System 1 thinking, just reacting.
But there are so many, though. I mean.
Absolutely.
How I don't think in our lifetime we could wipe it out. I don't.
I understand.
What kind of progress could we make? You know, I mean, how many more people are there out there like you that are teaching this empowering partners culture, as you call it? Yeah.
Well, you mean teaching cultural intelligence?
Culture intelligence. Yes.
Cultural intelligence.
Yes.
Yeah. I can't give you that number. I don't know. I've been trained by an organization called Intercultural Development Inventory.
Sure.
And there's of over 300 of us that are qualified administrators for the the Intercultural Development Inventory.
Sure.
And so I know that there are at least 300 of us worldwide working.
It's going to take more than that for us.
Absolutely. And isn't any change slow and steady? I mean, this is definitely not a sprint. This is a marathon. We're in it for the long haul. And we're going to end up changing it one heart and one soul at a time.
That is...
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That is...
Sorry it's going to take so long. And I know there's a sense of urgency, and I know people are dying at the hands of racism. And it's not that I don't feel a sense of urgency. I just know that if I don't continue to invite people into this work...
Sure.
I'm not going to be able to influence for change. I have been called out by colleagues of color for not calling people out and just labeling people as racist. And at the same time, I know that if I lose a relationship with somebody, I lose my opportunity to influence behavior and perceptions. So I work really hard to invite people into the work rather than calling them out. But that said, I'm white. I don't live with the urgency that an African American would, and I don't live literally and figuratively under the gun. And I know that's my privilege, and I don't take it lightly. Every opportunity I have to point out as people's privilege. May I give you an example with my son?
Sure.
I'll just finish that. So every opportunity I have to point out privilege and systems of power that are undermining people and their ability to be effective and whole and empowered, I'll take it. So my son, 18, a couple months back.
Bless his heart.
He's in college now, but last year, a senior in high school, he got pulled over by a police officer about 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. And next morning, he told me he'd gotten pulled over. And I said, oh, yeah? What happened? And he said, yeah, the police officer said I had a broken taillight. And I said, well, I know the car was just inspected, so I know you don't have a broken taillight. So what was going on? And he said, I don't know. That's what he said. And I said, kiddo, you got profiled. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, what else is a white boy driving around at 11 o'clock at night supposed to be doing other than be, you know, drunk or high?
Oh.
And he goes, oh,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's true. And I said, so first of all, good for you for proving that police officer wrong. I'm proud of you. And I was quiet for a second. And then I said, so, Christopher got a question for you. And he said, yeah. And I said, so, were you afraid when you got pulled over? And he goes, of course I was. No one wants to get pulled over, Mom. And I said, but were you afraid for your life? And he looked at me, he goes, no, I wasn't afraid for my life. And I said, so you knew you would drive away? And he goes, yeah. And I said, there's your privilege. Not every teenage boy has that opportunity, but a white boy does. And he goes, I get it, Mom. I get it.
Amazing. Okay, now you were just recently in Wisconsin, the cheese state. I mentioned that before.
Yes, sir.
How did that go?
The workshop that I did?
Yeah.
I was working with a group of Christian pastors, and I saw wonderful spiritual, emotional, intellectual growth. Around cultural intelligence.
Okay, how long was the workshop?
It was a day and a half.
Day and a half.
And the foundation of it, again, I had the opportunity to spend an hour on the phone with each of the pastors before the workshop started. Because, again, this work is always based on relationship. I can't influence hearts and souls unless people have some semblance of trust. Because in white culture, the taboo topics, race, religion, sex, and politics, right?
True.
Right? Because all of those are potential for conflict.
Sure.
And in the majority white culture, conflict avoidance, we talked about this last time, is Very important. So there's got to be a level of trust. And with each of these pastors, I had already had a conversation before the workshop, and they had all taken the IDI, this Intercultural Development Inventory, which is an online assessment of how culturally proficient they are, of their developmental stage of cultural intelligence. Can I tell you the five stages?
Sure.
So the five stages, and I'm sorry, I should have given credit. The IDI was developed by Dr. Mitch Hammer. Dr. Mitch Hammer. He is the one that gets credit for it. And it's the foundation for the work that I do. So what he's discovered is these five stages, and you'll recognize these words, are denial, polarization, minimization, acceptance, and adaptation. So the first two are monocultural mindsets. Denial, you completely miss differences if you're in denial. And that's not necessarily intentional. One of the clients I worked with, she's a gal who grew up in Waterloo, Illinois, and had never experienced anybody but white people and heard racist remarks all her life. And she was really intrigued to learn that she could grow and move out of denial. So for her, it wasn't intentional, whereas I'm sure for others it is.
Okay.
The second stage of development is polarization. This is somebody who's is aware of differences but is judgmental of them. Kind of goes around with an us versus them mentality, right? Those white people, those black people, those Hispanics, those Muslims. Big, broad brushstroke statements about groups of people.
Okay.
They make a lot of assumptions about differences.
Polarization.
When you're in polarizations.
Okay.
So this the transition phase, stage, I should say, minimization, is a person who's in minimization is de-emphasizing or minimizing differences. So they're aware of differences, but these folks are more inclined to talk about what we all have in common. We all have families and our children are really important to us. And yeah, we have differences, but let's just get along, right? And
that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Minimization.
And there it is. So about the IDI is used globally. It's not just in the United States. So multinational companies like Boeing and Disney parks worldwide, right?
Okay.
Where Sao Paulo and Chicago and Beijing may all have to talk. And they're all on very different cultural from different cultural contexts. And so it's really cool if they can know that they're inadvertently downplaying each other's uniqueness and gifts. But what's interesting is two-thirds of the people that take the IDI around the world show up in minimization.
Whoa.
That's pretty significant. One of the things that I want you to know, that it's not unique to the United States. Every country in the world has a majority population.
Yeah.
One that's in charge, right?
Yep, running things.
And as a result, many minority populations that are subordinate to that dominant culture, right? Good, bad, right, or wrong, that's the way countries run, right?
Sure.
I'm married to a Frenchman. There's definitely a dominant culture there. I lived in central Mexico for four years. There's definitely a dominant culture there. And there are minorities. And whether you describe those minorities based on gender or religion or ethnicity or whatever sexual orientation, whatever difference
sure.
is. So when two-thirds of the people show up in minimization, that can be pretty dangerous because majority folks show up in minimization because they don't want to upset the apple cart, right? Particularly in our culture, we don't want conflict and we're going to avoid conflict.
Sure.
But minorities show up in minimization just as much because they want to keep their jobs. It's out of survival.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Right?
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So are you saying that I mentioned that in my blog?
In your blog, yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned that.
In a lot of my blogs, minimization will show up because I don't think people realize how much minimizing other people infiltrates the way we are with people. And even when a mom says to a kid, don't worry about that, or a husband to a wife, that'll pass. You'll get over it. Minimizing somebody's feelings, doesn't work too well, right?
We do it so cavalierly, though.
We do it, and we do it probably with the best of intentions, wanting to help people get past something or get over something. It's really well-intended, and it's really hurtful.
Many times that's what fathers do to their sons or their children.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it'll hurt for a while. Just shake it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in particular, I'm 53 years old. In my generation and above, you just had to suck it up and get along. Right?
Suck it up.
if something was hard, just deal with it, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's but life.
That's just life,
it's
right?
It's going to happen. Exactly, yes.
That is minimization in action. And that's not great for an organization that's looking for innovation and collaboration and to skyrocket, which will eventually impact profits, right? So, and these church leaders were really interesting because they were like, well, Amy, if you usually work in a secular world and churches are so different, how can you work with us? And I'm like, wait, are you telling me that you don't want to reach a broader market? And they're like, oh, okay, that's true. You know, whether you're for-profit or non-profit, we all want to reach a broader market.
How many pastors were you working with?
About 10.
Okay, what was the biggest surprise? Or was there one?
No particular surprise. It's folks tend to show up in minimization, and as a result, when people are in minimization, they don't see the systems in play. They don't see the power structures in play because they're part of the dominant culture, which is the norm, which is normal. They just think, not the pastor. I'm talking about people in minimization.
Sure.
That's part of the danger of minimization is they don't see the systems in play that are determining our behavior and our thought processes.
Yeah.
And as a result, when they try to reach out into a broader community to reach that broader market, they're not going to take the time to dig down and understand how they experience life. So when you're in minimization, you tend to think everybody has the same experience. Right?
Yeah.
Right? And we don't have the same experience. But you can see the danger in that assumption. And so when majority culture folks just tell their kids or black people or whatever, just get over it, it's because there's this assumption that we all have the same experience, and I got over it, so why aren't you getting over it?
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
You weak or something?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, these last two.
Okay.
So minimization is right before acceptance and adaptation. So somebody who's in acceptance, and only 15% of the people that take the IDI show up in acceptance. So you were wondering earlier why more people aren't accepting and, you know, part of this work.
Sure.
Only 15% of the population that takes this shows up in acceptance. And that's just individuals who deeply understand that we all have different experiences, that everything we do is culturally based, whether it's eating with flatbread, chopsticks, or a fork. How we say good morning is culturally based. I told you that my French mother-in-law, she's no longer with us. But in France, you don't just say good morning. It's always good morning and how did you sleep? And we don't say that in America. When I first got married, it's so funny because I had to learn to answer that question and ask that question. And if you don't ask the question, it's culturally offensive. You can offend somebody. I was like, I didn't know that. And I was such a baby when I met Cyril. I was so young at 18, and I just offended her right and left. But I didn't know about culture and cultural differences at that point. Well, now I know. Now I'm in France. When I'm in France, and because I really work toward being acceptance and adaptation, you know darn well I say good morning and how did you sleep?
Yeah.
And so that's what adapting this last stage, adaptation, is your ability to bridge across differences. And this is the goal, not only accept yours and my difference, but be able to adjust your behavior so that it comes across as respectful. It doesn't mean I lose who I am.
Mm.
All it does is me moving over to system two thinking and going, huh, I wonder what respect is for him and or her, and adapting my behavior such that we can talk and my behavior doesn't get in the way of that conversation.
What you're talking about here is just simply understanding the other person's, you know, upbringing and their culture and not being offensive.
Well, but here's the kicker, and mm-hmm. this is the difference often in diversity training. We learn about the other, and there's no way I, as one person, can learn about a bunch of a whole lot of other cultures. So one of the things that I do, because I don't know when I'm stepping into a new situation, is I really work hard to move into System 2 thinking and slow down and observe. So in my African-American church, fellowship time is upwards to 20 or 30 minutes, and Pastor Sims is up there, you know, calling us to order, and we're not paying attention. Because when somebody says, "How are you?" in this church, they really mean it, and you need to answer that question. And there is deep connection. And if I'm not hugging properly, I will be turned around and pulled into a hug. And it was very funny for that 18-year-old white son of mine, who's an engineer and rather look at his shoelaces than people in the eye. Ooh, the first couple of Sundays.
Well, he doesn't have a monopoly on that one.
Oh, he did not know what to do with all that hugging and kissing.
Yeah. But, making me sick. Good Lord. Get away. You know, well, he didn't say that. I'm just simply saying because I know there are some kids that do that, man. Some adults, too, that know better, that I feel should know better. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, Christopher had to adapt his behavior. He learned how to hug, and, well, it's about time. And he got used to hugging and being hugged. That's really dear.
Well, that cut in on his social media time, too, I'm sure.
What do you mean?
You know, because many of the kids, you know, they're into social media, you know, and their iPhones and cell phones.
Right.
Because you're talking to them or whatever the case is. Even adults. I was coming down the hall today at work, and I heard footsteps behind me. And this guy was walking, had his iPhone, satellite dish or something in his hand. I said, "Good morning." He said, he was very gruff with it.
Huh?
"Good morning." I says, "Oh God, yeah, yeah."
He was gruff because social media. What he was doing was distracting him from being present with you.
Exactly.
Right.
Not that I was hurt and I stopped breathing and I'm not going to grow another foot or something
but,
like that.
But
you know.
Noticed it.
Well, that happens not so much as that, but like even in this, the present day culture, you know, you say good morning and hey, how are you? To some people, boy, they like, why are you speaking to me?
Yeah.
And I'm going, ooh.
Ouch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, you know, so I try to avoid it. But anyway, nevertheless, Dr. Amy, time is of the essence. It's been fun as usual. You want to come back again?
Oh, I'd be honored to speak with you.
Okay, now where's
and work with Paula.
Yeah.
You guys are an awesome team.
Yeah. Well, she makes me who I am, and I appreciate that.
Ooh, completeness here.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Your next workshop is where?
I'm doing a workshop with the Ferguson 1000, Global 1000 group on Monday night, December 3rd.
Okay.
And we'll actually go over these stages of intercultural competence, and we'll unpack how minimization is impacting their work and ability to grow stronger and more effective businesses.
Well, you know, you give great examples of minimization and that type of thing. It's something that we do all the time and not even aware of it.
Right, we do.
We do it all the time.
Yeah.
We do it all the time. So the next workshop is when? December 3rd?
Yes, Monday night, December 3rd at Ferguson 1000, Global 1000.
Okay, good deal.
Yeah.
In case we want to,
you'll be there, right?
Yes, I will.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. In case we want to get in touch with you to learn more about empowering partners.
Yes.
Called cultural diversity.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You can go to my website, empoweringpartners.com.
Okay. Good deal.
My contact information's there, the workshops that I teach. And also, you can see the graphic that I'm looking at here that shows the stages of cultural competence.
Is that... Okay.
Ask me the question. What?
No, you know, I keep wondering why it's not real popular with people. Now you not only work with pastors, you work with what?
I totally interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that Mitch Hammer developed this. This is probably only a decade or so old.
Okay.
This is fairly new concept. Fairly new work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Hats off to you, Mitch, wherever you are, man. Blessings to you, dude. Hey, you're greatly appreciated up in here. Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Yes.
Is your family involved in this?
They have no choice.
Hello.
Okay. My daughter works in New York City for Business Insider magazine, and she and I talk regularly how minimization impacts her work in the news media, and she works hard to move toward acceptance and adaptation in reporting about businesses around the world.
That's amazing.
It's really fun to see her at work.
Awesome. Dr. Amy Nurishkin, thank you so much for your time.
Thank
Peace
you,
and
sir.
Blessings to you and your family.
Thank
and happy
you.
Holidays as well.
Thank you.
How much time I got, Paula? There you go. Okay, let's see. You up for it? KXEN listeners? Okay, KXEN 1010 AM and 104.5 FM. Faith Talk for St. Louis is having a two-pack of books and Bible giveaway. That's two books. And the books are The Prayer Matrix, Plugging Into the Unseen Reality by David Jeremiah, and Lessons I Learned in the Dark, Steps to Walking by Faith and Not by Sight by Jennifer Rothschild. And a copy of the Word of Life Study Bible is yours as well from... by calling this number at 314 area code 881-1695, 881-1695. They're yours. Do it today and not delay. Oh, by the way, Jazz Thomas, entrepreneur and businesswoman, presents a Black Business Expo this Saturday, the 17th of November, this month, this year, this millennium, is going to be at the Legacy Books and Cafe at 5249 Del Mar. On display will be more than 30 Black-owned businesses and organizations as well coming together to promote economic growth and unity in the community. Vendor and sponsorship opportunities available. For more information, please visit the website at www.girlswithgoals.net. That's girlswithgoals.net. Before I run out the door, a couple of things I want to lay on you before we shut this bad boy down. Texas professor disrupts class to have police remove Black student from having her feet on the chair. Okay. A professor of the University of Texas, San Antonio, is having backlash after having a Black student escorted out of class by police for having her feet propped up on a chair during a lecture. University officials say they are now investigating the incident. The guy goes on to say that the class before, the professor went on a whole tirade about how uncivil we all were because a few students were on their phones or not paying attention. So much for that. Now, I went to YouTube and I watched the video, and what I saw of those kids, those students, in my opinion, they were very unruly because there was one young lady who was sitting up front. She had a basket of Kentucky Fried Chicken or something, and she was on a cell phone and wasn't paying attention. Well, she had an iPod stuck in her ear and all this other good stuff, man. I said, you know what? I'm with the teacher. That's it. That's all I can say about that. I'm done. Anyway, peace and blessings to you. Minutes away from 10 o'clock in Middle America. And what else can I tell you? Back at you on Friday. I got somebody coming. I don't know who it is, so I got to sign the contract before I can mention the name, you know, because they're one of the heavy hitters like Evangelist Paul A. Moeller. Yeah. And it's on KXEN 1010 AM and 104.5 FM, Faith Talk for St. Louis. Bye.